morning.
Red 10 standing by.
Red 7 standing by.
Red 3 standing by.
Red 6 standing by.
Red 9 standing by.
You're listening to the Ion Cannon Podcast.
Laugh it up, fuzzball.
Your source for entertainment reviews from a galaxy far, far away.
This is it.
Hey, laser clankers!
Welcome to the Ion Cannon Podcast. I'm one of your hosts, Steven, and I'm joined by my friends and co-hosts, Tom and William. Guys, today I'm the I bring news. What's the word for it?
Hopefully it's not a harbinger.
It's not your worst one, but man, I don't know. Yeah.
You all put the pressure on me, so now this is you just get to reap what you sow.
Yes.
I don't think either of us are putting the pressure on you. I think you're doing it yourself.
I think you are.
I don't think we asked for this.
I don't know if anyone asked for this. I don't even know if our listeners, they're probably actually asking for the opposite.
Well, some of them may be asking for it because I find it fascinating that you're able to come up with different ways.
Know. Exactly. Yeah. But this is a fun one. We've got a pretty big, in some ways, episode of The Bad Batch to discuss. As well as the trailer for the next TV series, The Acolyte. So we finally have a trailer. We have a date. June 4th is the premiere with two episodes and Tuesdays at 6 p.m. thereafter. So even though The Bad Batch has been dropping at midnight, which is a bit of a bummer, The Acolyte will go back to Tuesdays at 6 p.m., and the official description of the series before we dive into the trailer, it says, in The Acolyte, an investigation into a shocking crime spree pits a respected Jedi master against a dangerous warrior from his past. As more clues emerge, they travel down a dark path where sinister forces reveal all is not what it seems. So, this trailer, we're a bit delayed on this just because the Harbinger only just came out a couple days ago. And we wanted to wait for our next episode to dive into this trailer. But what did you guys think of The Acolyte? This is the first Star Wars series set during the High Republic era, and it's a little more dark in some ways. Focuses, it sounds like, maybe on a Sith and a crime spree, a whole bunch of murders. What do you guys think of this trailer?
Consider me like cautiously interested.
Agreed.
Like I think we've talked about before, I've never been particularly big on High Republic era, but like this genuinely looked pretty solid. I'm cautiously hopeful. I'm hoping we get an Andor, level of show here.
Yeah, I'm cautiously optimistic. The thing that I find fascinating, it sounds more like a cop drama than a Star Wars show. We'll see.
Yeah, I liked seeing so many Jedi around. It reminds me of the early prequels, right? Mm-hmm. Or just the prequels in general. Lots of Jedi around. We get a few familiar faces. We'll dive into that in a moment. But yeah, it's I don't know. Yeah, it might be more of like I'm very interested to see, right? What it's like. Is it a little more of like a crime drama or a little bit of you've got a lot of aliens in here. I'm very intrigued by the show.
Mm-hmm. For sure.
Yeah, let's see. So, of course, we got some character names. So, Amandla Stenberg is playing May, who I think is the Sith / evil character. There's also Master Soul, played by Lee Jung Jae. Khmer, I think his name is pronounced, played by Manny Jacinto. He's a traitor and a former smuggler. Jeki, played by Daphne Keen, who is Master Soul's apprentice. She's half Thielen, half human. Yord, played by Charlie Bennett, is a Jedi Knight and a guardian of the temple. Mother Anicia, played by Jodie Turner-Smith, who's the leader of a coven of witches. So we get more of the, it sounds like Night Sisters. Master Vernestra Rowe, played by Rebecca Henderson, of course, from the High Republic books. So that she's the big familiar face here in the trailer. We get we actually don't see, I don't think we see this character in the trailer, but Dean Charles Chapman is playing a character unnamed so far. Master Kal Naka, a Wookiee played by Yuna Tsunotomo, and Master Indara played by Carrie Ann Moss. So yeah, this will be fun. A lot of scenes. Is that like Ilum maybe or Octu? I'm not sure, but yeah.
You know what?
We shall see.
It's one of those things in which you're going to have to get in the episode to find out. I mean, is it possibly Jakku? Nobody knows. So until we get into the series, it's all questions until the series premieres.
Yeah. One nice little tidbit. Series creator Leslie Headland noted that she put in a lot of EU lore into the show because she thought it was cool and no one told her she couldn't. And so we're going to see a Zygerian Jedi. They're going to canonize a species that we've never seen yet, but I guess was in the books. And she says there are a couple really big EU ideas that are utilized both early on in the series and later in the series.
Fascinating.
So, yeah. Very excited about that as well.
Yeah. It'll be fascinating to see, are they going to pull in lore from Darth Bane? Are they going to pull in lore from Naomi Sunrider? How far back are they going to go with all this stuff?
Yeah, I don't know. And I think, Steven, you had mentioned to me before that there's one location that almost maybe looks like...
Tom mentioned it briefly as well.
Oh, like, yeah.
There's a shot of what looks like the entrance. I don't even know how to describe it, like bus stop for Jakku.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Nima outpost.
Yeah, thank you.
Yeah,
and it's definitely like a one for one. I say definitely, having not actually looked them side by side, but like it looks very similar to the monument on Jakku. I think the question is like, is it meant to be Jakku, and you know, time has just changed, or is there, you know, something else going on? But it's really cool to see.
If I'm not mistaken, in the books, there is, you know, Jakku used to be lush long ago. I think, pretty sure. And so, yeah, maybe we're seeing it when it's still lush. But yeah. Sorry, it was. According to Wikipedia, Jakku was once a verdant world. So from Star Wars complete locations. Mm-hmm. And maybe that's also some of the stuff that she means by deep in the EU, right? Oh, we're going to go to Jakku. Mm-hmm. We're going to go to these other things. Who knows? But yeah, June 4th. So we're going to get two episodes on June 4th and then episodes weekly after that. So if they do one episode a week and don't do like any more two-parters for the rest of the season, the finale will be on July 16th. So definitely, yeah, it's exciting. We'll see. I'm very excited. Looking at the schedule, I'm a little bit nervous about, just to be honest, when we're going to record, because we're expecting our first kid, first child in beginning of July. So you might have to record without me, or I don't know, maybe I'll be able to join. We'll see. Having a little Padawan, but in the meantime,
you'll have a Padawan and get him up to speed really quick.
Exactly. Yeah. Yes. A little. Yeah. But I'm excited. I'm excited to see what this show has in store.
Okay. Should we talk about Bad Batch now?
Yes, because the Bad Batch was, unfortunately spoiled in the trailers, but it's a surprising entrance of a character. So, Tom,
I wouldn't say it
take
was
it away.
I wouldn't say it was
spoiled. Oh, no, it was totally spoiled in the trailers.
but anyway, we're going to be talking. Yeah, I know. But it's to each his own. But we are going to be talking about The Bad Batch, Season 3, Episode 9, The Harbinger, directed by Stuart Lee and written by Jennifer Corbett. In this episode, as The Batch plans their next move, a mysterious stranger arrives. Well, we all know who that mysterious stranger is. The one thing I have to say I really appreciated is we started back on Pabu. We finally find the place still exists, you know, and it's still peaceful as it was before. So
I do like how they keep taking us back to Pabu this season and last season. You know, it's kind of become their new home, whereas before they were, I think it was Nar Shaddaa, right, with Sid. And Pabu is a much more peaceful location. We'll see, you know, here and there them helping the people of Pabu. Like we see Crosshair even helping people out, right? Showing that he's not just helping them. He's not just sided with the Bad Batch, but he's actually trying to help others as well. He's really, that's how much he's actually changed. But yeah, it's nice to see. And so, yeah, in this episode, they go back to Pabu and we get to spend some more time there. I appreciated that. But it, very quickly, something is going on. Batcher chases some skittering Munoz into a cave, and Omega notices there's a starfighter parked deep in the caves, and Asajj Ventress herself walks out of the shadows. Thought the scene was really well done. Like played with a lot of tension. Mm-hmm. You don't really know if she's there to harm or help Omega. Yep. Especially she's like dragging Omega out. What did you guys think of the introduction of Asajj? Before we get into the, we'll get to how the heck is she around? How the heck is she here? But
yeah.
Let's just start with her introduction.
I appreciate that they definitely, like I said, play up the, like, you don't actually know if she's here to help or hurt. Mm-hmm. Especially, you know, like, obviously Asajj Ventress, historically a villain of the Clone Wars, worked for the Separatists. Not known, I would assume, as the nicest person, you know, around the galaxy. What?
She's everyone's friend.
I mean,
from a certain point of view.
But, like, it makes that moment of, you know, Asajj walking out with Omega, really, you're really not sure which direction we're going here. Because it could have gone either, honestly. Like, she's working for the Empire, or she's here for other reasons.
Yeah.
And I also appreciated where the Bad Batch sat there and had to look through Rex's database. And literally, we're telling Omega, she is a war criminal. I mean, they know exactly how bad she is. Omega, I completely understand why she has, and she's used it many times, telling them you have to trust people. But in this case, the Bad Batch had a point. Is she at this point able to be trusted? Ventress, able to be trusted? And they did lay out why not to. So
yeah, I liked, that's one of the things I liked about this episode quite a bit. Of course, aside from just Asajj Ventress being back, is the fact that you know, we don't really know what's happened to her since she supposedly died, right? So we talked about this in past episodes, but for those who maybe missed it or haven't read the book Dark Disciple, she and Quinlan Vos team up in the book Dark Disciple, which was based on unproduced scripts of the Clone Wars. So it was a story from George Lucas himself that was never finished. They got midway through production when the series was canceled. They turned those scripts into a book. So it's officially canon, right? It is the official Clone Wars story. They tried to wrap up her, what happens to her. And at the end of the book, she dies in Quinlan Vos's arms. And there's like a love story between them. And they take Asajj to Dathomir, and they bury her. Well, and that's the last we've heard of Asajj.
Well, they technically put her in a green mystical pool.
That's true,
if I remember correct. Yep. Yeah. So technically.
Yep.
Yeah, technically they put her in the living waters of Dathomir, whatever. So whatever kind of magics, and this is, you know, the Night Sisters, we don't know the full effect of their magics at this point. We know that they can reanimate zombies, but how far gone, theoretically, was Ventress at the point to where they put her in this magic waters or living waters? And we talked about her possibly being a clone. This is not a clone. This appears to actually be Ventress.
It doesn't seem like a clone. Yeah, I mean, no. she's different.
She's different.
Can we just talk through, like, I'd say let's go through to the end for this as well. But
thank,
like,
you. That's why.
Okay,
that's
we can save this for later if we want. But
I did not want to spoil.
I specifically want to talk about, like, this piece, because when we saw the trailer, they kind of put up a statement proactively of like, hey, it all makes sense. Don't worry. I came away pretty disappointed from this episode because I feel like the closest we get is Asajj has a line at the very end, which amounts to like, I have other lives, or like, you know,
It's like a cat with nine lives.
I have a few lives left. It's like,
Yeah. And I was just like, oh, is that really the best explanation we're going to get for this? Like, I don't think they ever address how she comes back. And they definitely just kind of like hand wave it off to the side, it felt like. Mm-hmm.
So let's just talk about it now first, and then we'll...
I'd like to.
I agree with you, Stephen. That was... I loved her in this episode, but that was my biggest complaint with it, is that... And actually, I'm going to go find the exact statement from Jennifer Corbett, because I think it's... I think it's important to look at. So she said... Let's see. Here we go. Hold on. While I look it up, it's in... Okay, here we go. Oh, sorry, it was actually Brad Rao, right? He says, quote, "We love Asajj Ventress. She's a character that we've been wanting to tell more stories about. We don't want to spoil anything, but we want fans to know that any new storytelling with Ventress will align with the events of Star Wars Dark Disciple." So that is great. Like, I love they're acknowledging it, and they're going to align with the events of Dark Disciple. Fantastic. However, we don't get an answer in this episode.
We get sorry, a wink
I'm
and a nod.
A bold question. Uh-huh. Would you consider this aligning with the events of that book?
Unclear.
It's unclear, but I treated it as a wink and a nod.
So,
okay.
I'm not going to discount it, because it's very possible that they have an explanation they just haven't told us that aligns with the events of the book, right? We're seeing a moment in time for Asajj Ventress. Mm-hmm. We're not seeing the thing they came up with that makes sense and fits with Dark Disciple. And Jennifer Corbett actually said right after the episode aired, quote, "How she survived will be revealed in future content. But for this story, we were thrilled to include her and explore her unique connection to and compassion for Omega," end quote. Mm-hmm. That tells me we're not seeing it. Definitely not in this episode, and maybe not even in this series. Yeah.
Then that would lead into, it's going to have to either be other media, meaning books, an audiobook, or a comic book, or possibly another show. Because to me, that was a wink and a nod that,
like,
it did take into account what happened in Dark Disciple, but they're not going to explain it in this show.
So that's my theory, Tom, is like, are they setting up the next animated series? Are we going to get an Asajj Ventress series?
That is going to be a fascinating question, because did they not close down the studio that has done the animation for these series?
No.
For years.
I mean, I think one of the locations, but like they haven't.
Okay.
Yeah. The people who make the show is still very much around.
Okay. I thought that studio was shut down.
No, so I don't think so. I think part of CGCG, I think, may have been. I forget. But the interesting thing also that I want to bring this up, because there's a lot to unpack here, and I have many thoughts. But one other interesting quote, Brad Rao also said, quote, "Ventress is one of our all-time favorite characters. So when Dave brought up the idea of bringing her into the Bad Batch, we were beyond excited," end quote. So that tells me not only was this was Dave Filoni's idea. Mm-hmm. So maybe she shows up in a live action series. Maybe she shows up in, I don't know. Clearly it was Dave's idea, and I trust Dave, but I'm also a little bummed we didn't get an explanation in this episode.
I actually think they would have been better off if they had given the second statement that you read at the beginning. We have a way where we've brought Ventress back, but we may not describe it. Like, it may not be in this particular.
Yes.
Yeah, we may not describe it at this time.
Because they set expectations that we were going to get the answer, and we didn't.
Right.
Yep. And I spent the entire episode kind of waiting for that shoe, and it turned out there was no shoe.
Okay, as crazy as this is, there are still how many episodes of The Bad Batch left? There is theoretically the possibility we could get an explanation. And I'm saying theoretically lightly. Okay. But I kind of agree. I think they really would have been better off kind of giving us the explanation in this episode, because now it just opens up more questions about what's going to happen and how are you going to explain it? Because you put us on the edge of our seat. We want to know how.
Yeah, I don't know. I'm skeptical that they will address it in this series, just given that it felt like they wrapped up her story pretty cleanly in this episode.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I agree
and
with you on that.
With just, I think, 6 episodes left in the series after this episode, there's not a lot of time to go diving in. I was expecting Asajj Ventress to show up in the next 2 episodes, right? They're called Identity Crisis and Point of No Return. That was like, oh, Identity Crisis. That's Asajj Ventress. She's a clone, right? We got this. It's a 2-parter. They're going to explain a bunch. And then she shows up in Harbinger. And I was like, oh, that was earlier than I thought. And we didn't get any answers. Yeah.
Okay, so here's another question. Do you think, because of the title of Harbinger, was she actually a harbinger of news? Because sat here. You know what, Stephen? Go ahead.
Go ahead. Finish your thought, Tom.
Okay. I was kind of confused because when I'm going to get to it now, when she sat there and she's giving Omega all these tests, okay, theoretically she only passed the one. Hey, go get this white blossom from a tree. And then she failed the one on the boat. She failed the one with the, you know, with the one leg in the air, theoretically. And then she gave the blood test. Okay, so number one, why didn't you do the blood test in the beginning? She gave her the other 3 first. And then why did she lie about the blood test?
I don't think she ever did a blood test.
I don't remember a blood test.
She never did a blood test.
Okay, but still.
But you're right, Tom.
Yeah.
And I'll. Sorry, let me.
No, I, yeah.
I'm gonna derail from your point slightly.
No, go ahead.
So the majority of this episode is Omega being tested by Asajj. We're testing her M count. Maybe it was just me. I found that like most of this episode super boring. Because it was, none of the tests were particularly interesting. None of them felt like we were learning anything new. Like by far the best part I thought was when, you know, she's sent off on the first test, which I think may have just been like, hey, we're about to fight and I don't want Omega to be here.
Yeah.
Right. Totally get it. Totally get it.
But there was not, like, I just didn't feel like there was anything interesting happening at all in this, like, the majority of this episode. It was very, very, like, I don't know, cut and dried and kind of iffy. And then, yeah, to your point, Tom, and then it ends and, like, we're, I think we did get an answer, but, like, I don't know.
I think an interesting part for me was the third test where you saw Asajj basically call in the little fishy thingies and then that creature come out of the ocean. That was probably one of the most fascinating things to watch because at that point you could tell that Asajj changed because here she is telling the Bad Batch, stop fighting this creature, okay? And Omega's saying, please stop, let Ventress handle this. And Ventress, instead of quote unquote killing this thing, because, you know, it's what she could have done in the past, she basically was able to sit here, use the force and tame the beast and then have the beast go away. So to me, that shows, number one, she has changed.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And Stephen, you might be right. Maybe she didn't do the blood test. Okay. But I still think to some extent she lied.
Sorry. Go ahead, Stephen.
It lied in what sense, Tom? Like, you think...
Lied about the M count.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
She straight up admits it.
Yeah.
Yeah, she 100% lies to Omega, and pretty much, like, I don't remember
but
if it was
why?
Unspoken I mean, or spoken, thing. But it's to keep her safe. Because yeah. if...
Well, okay, okay now
if
I get that.
She knows
totally
she has midichlorians and can be a Jedi or, you know, or use the Force, then she's even more of a threat to the Empire because she might go and do something that would even further expose herself.
Right. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I think, though... Stephen, you make a really good point about the structure of the episode. It felt like I enjoyed the episode overall, but it did feel like they were looking at, okay, well, we have this like test that kind of shows that Omega has a high M count, but we really need to show it to viewers. And so they wanted to bring in, typically, right, when you start to have someone who's starting to grow in their usage of the Force, right, you have that mentor episode where a mentor comes in and starts to like, not really, maybe train them or maybe just like test them. And it really proves that no, Omega does have the Force, right? And so they wanted that Jedi mentor type of character. But at this part in the era, and you know, in the galaxy, this time, there's not a lot of Jedi left. And I'll bet you they looked at it and were like, who could we have actually be a Jedi that we haven't, you know, there's Kanan out there, but he was in the premiere, but he's in hiding. You know, there's others out there, but there's like Cal Kestis out there and stuff. But let's, you know, of course, Obi-Wan, but let's try to not do one of those characters. And they're like, Asajj. She's changed. At least, you know, she fell in love with Quinlan Vos and seems to be, you know, turning, you know, maybe not quite fully to the light, but a little more in the neutral zone, not bad.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And they're like, oh, she's the perfect choice to be that mentor-like person who knows enough about the Force and has the ability to use the Force, but is not necessarily a Jedi. And I think that's why they picked her.
I guess the thing that rubs me a little bit, though, William, is that this isn't a mentor episode, though, because I don't feel like
they stop short
really
of
being mentored by Asajj.
Oh yeah, for sure. But I think they still wanted to. I think they needed to show viewers that she has the Force instead of just having like a test and that's it. They wanted to show her that she is Force sensitive. The way in which they did it, I love that they included Asajj. Even though there's a lot of questions, I'm willing to be patient and wait for the answer as to how she survived. I agree, though, that the tests themselves were very lackluster. Like, the first test was balancing on one leg with a stone on your, or a fruit on your, on her head. Which I loved seeing Asajj Ventress like grab it every time Omega start to fall when she's not, you know, Ventress isn't even looking and she just grabs the fruit every single time. So good. And that moment where she like puts her hand over Omega's mouth and like turns her face is like pure like Disney moment, you know, with that expression. But I enjoyed it all. The second test though, I run to the top and very quickly and grab it, a white blossom from the Weeping Maya tree. It's sunset. It's running out of time. You have to quickly get up there. But like, she never used the Force. She just managed to get Ryde Batcher up and back and do it quickly. And you're right. It was mostly, I think, so she could fight. And then the last one, that's where it felt like the first real test of the Force in the third
closest
test
to it.
Yeah. That is the closest to it.
Yeah. But the first two were pretty lackluster. I think the first one, fine. You know, she's like balancing. It's kind of like a Jedi test. The second one, I think you're right. It was just to get out of here. I'm going to fight.
It was a MacGuffin.
Yeah.
To me, it was a MacGuffin because all she needed to do was sit there and try and get the Bad Batch to in a way, ridicule them to say, look, I can do this fighting all day. And if you guys are trying to keep her safe, you're doing a really good job at that. Because, look, I was able to find you.
Yeah, I do. Okay. I do wish they had done something a little more scientific, like, I don't know, a midichlorian test or something, like a blood test, but I guess they've already done enough of those that they just wanted to show her abilities, although she never actually exhibits any Force powers in this episode.
The one, I would say the one time you could say she got maybe close to it was when she was on that boat. And she had the hand out and she was concentrating. But it's like when Asajj Ventress sat there and said, it's like, in a way, you're really not giving yourself enough time. You're giving up with this too quickly. And watch me. I can do it like this the same way. And boom, look what I can do.
Yeah. So I don't know. Yeah. So I agree with you, Stephen. The tests themselves were fine. I liked seeing Ventress back, though. And she is... Her dialogue is great. Nika Futterman does such a wonderful job voicing her. And so I loved all of those moments quite a bit. It's also cool to see her new look, which is kind of like her...
Oh, I love that model.
Her flashback look in the Clone Wars. So that her having hair is not unprecedented. I forgot that we see her when she's a very young in the Clone Wars flashback. We see her with hair. She's got yellow lightsabers. So, it's cool. And even just the moments, like, always stop smiling. It's unsettling. It's just so good.
And I got to say this. I loved it when she was underwater and she was swimming to go get Omega. And her hair had that mohawk look to it. I thought that was freaking cool.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Oh, the animation under the water was
outstanding.
Phenomenal.
Yeah.
Yeah. And even just like the little character moments, like when she's introducing herself and, you know, she tells them that they're being reckless in investigating M count. And, you know, she instantly picks up that Omega's just telling a story about, oh, I have a friend who's, you know, who may or may not be force sensitive. And Asajj Ventress instantly knows it's Omega. So, you know, she's very perceptive and I like her character a lot. And so it's really cool to have her back, even though I wish we'd gotten more from the tests, more from the explanation as to how she'd survived.
Yeah, I feel the same.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's going to have to come out at some point. They've teased that there's information about how she was able to make it some way, somehow in any of the media. It's going to have to come out in whatever form.
Yeah.
They promised it.
Yep. Yeah. That eventually I think they will. Also, how great was it to hear the word midichlorians finally?
Yes. Instead of the M count.
Oh yeah. Asajj finally says, she finally says midichlorians. It's so good.
Yeah.
It's so good. Also, I want to talk about the two action sequences for a moment because they were very well done. The in the second test, while Omega's running up to get the blossom from the Weeping Maya tree, okay, whatever. The batch, they know Asajj Ventress looks familiar, and so Crosshair. He goes and he checks and he's like, oh yeah, no, that's Asajj Ventress.
confirmed.
Yeah. And they instantly go into protective mode and start to corner Asajj Ventress. And this leads to a phenomenal hand-to-hand combat scene. I thought it was so well done. It's just like, you could just feel the force and the lowercase F force, you know, and it was just so good. And when she takes their blasters away, sorry, Steven, go ahead.
No, it was really interesting. I feel like, and I wonder if there's a behind the scenes thing they'll come out with at some point, but it felt like they animated her at like 2x speed basically compared to the rest as well. Just really, I think, selling what it would probably be like to fight against a Jedi, which is, you know, not great.
Yeah.
But it's very, very impressive. I agree.
And it's always fun to hear Wrecker saying, we can continue. Come on. We were just getting started.
Also, like she's definitely holding back, right? She knocks out Crosshair. She kicks, or she has like Hunter pinned down. She definitely bests them all as she should. And even force chokes Wrecker, but she holds back from actually killing them. And again, showing how she's changed. She's grown. And even acknowledging that they were all pawns in this war and the Empire is what's really dangerous.
I think that was one of the best lines of the whole thing because she did sum up exactly how the whole Clone Wars was portrayed.
Mm-hmm.
Everybody was played.
Yep. Yeah. And this leads again, one of the really nice moments in this episode, a series of moments where Omega, as she always does, she wants to believe that people can change, and she is willing to believe the best in people. But, you know, everyone else is very skeptical of Asajj Ventress. And that moment when she calls out Crosshair and she says, well, we never gave up on you, so why is Asajj Ventress any different, was so good. And you could just see Crosshair go, dang it, you're right.
Yep. I got tagged.
Yep.
Yep.
So that was a nice moment. And then should we talk about you mentioned briefly the battle with the Varathian, Tom, but should we talk about that whole water sequence a little bit more? It was, again, really, really cool. I liked that quite a lot. How did you feel with that sequence, Tom?
Well, like I said, I thought the best thing about it was, one, to see her use a lightsaber underwater was kind of cool. But again, to me, that whole sequence showed how she has changed. She wasn't really into fighting and killing. She was into basically trying to control the situation, to defuse it, and basically, you know, just make peace with the creature and say, let's just go on your way. And telling the batch to back off and Omega to trust that, you know, I thought, you know, there's not much more you can say about it. I think it just worked very well.
Yeah. No, I agree. Sorry, Stephen.
Okay. It was a solid fight for sure. It looked very familiar to me. I couldn't place where the Baratheon like looked like. Maybe Avatar.
Kind of like a Raftar.
Yeah, he's got like an underwater Raftar.
It was a very familiar looking, but it was definitely cool.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's, and again, it reminded me of the Water War episode from Mon Cal in the Clone Wars. But you could just see they've really stepped up the water animation so much. It's just so good. So good. And even after, right, while Asajj is doing all the tests, the Bad Batch are, they're keeping an eye on Omega from afar. They'll let them all go off and do their tests, but they're gonna watch her and make sure nothing happens.
Well, I think that was almost Ventress's point, to where even though they're not doing a great job hiding her, it seemed like she knew the best place for Omega was to stay with them.
Mm-hmm.
Because I believe she did say that if it was true she had the Force, they really couldn't train her. She should go to like a master or with her.
Right.
But she did sit there and say, she is better off with you guys.
Yeah. And well, I think that's why she lied, right? She knows that if Omega knows she has the Force, she's going to want to seek it out. She's naturally going to be curious, and that's going to put a target on her back. Whereas she doesn't know, hopefully that talent never comes out. And sure, the Empire's after her, but because the Empire knows, but maybe if they can stop whoever's after her and keep the secret safe, she'll be fine. And I think that's why she lies. But as soon as Omega leaves, she fully admits to the batch that, you know, she that was not the truth, and that they're not safe on Pabu. Briefly talking about the lie really quick. I'll be honest, part of me was kind of hoping that maybe she actually did have a really low M count, right? Maybe it was a high M count for a clone, obviously, because it's zero. But so often, the main character becomes Force sensitive in Star Wars. And part of that is, you know, it's natural, right? It's we're following the Jedi or whatever. But even in like Ahsoka, Sabine becomes Force sensitive. We find out eventually. And, you know, of course, that's a little bit in Rebels too. Omega having like a small but irrelevant amount of midichlorians that was like high enough that the Empire would care about her as a first step toward their goal, but low enough that she had really has no true Force ability, would have been really interesting, I thought, because it would be different and a little fresh. But she definitely has midichlorians.
Well, but okay, she's got the midichlorians. I don't know. I mean, I find it fascinating. I really do, because it's like, out of all the clones that they've tested, it's still her. But again, why isn't it, again, I think we've discussed, why aren't they also going after Boba Fett?
Because well, they don't Boba know. He doesn't have midichlorians, though.
Well, but then again, has he ever been tested?
Yeah, sorry, go to Steven.
I was going to say, it feels like Omega was special for Nala Se.
I think Nala Se tried to give her midichlorians.
Yeah.
Okay, so that would probably explain that. Okay, yeah. And that to me would explain it all away. And then it appeared that Nala Se was successful.
Yep. Yeah, but how can she replicate it, I think, is the... Or how can the Empire replicate it, is the... The big question.
Yeah.
But.
So let's throw this in here. So, sure, Omega has the high midichlorian count. Sure, to become a Jedi, she has to be trained. But that doesn't necessarily mean that, as we kind of saw in this, even though the training was lackluster, even though you have a high midichlorian count, even though, how do you know that the training will bring out your force ability with a very high midichlorian count? Maybe it is just, you know, an accident that she has that. But still, because she has it, doesn't necessarily mean you can transfer it to somebody else. And yes, with training, they can tap into it. I mean, the Empire could be going after a complete fallacy, thinking that is the case, when in reality, it may not be the case that you could have that high midichlorian count, even with training, still be a Jedi.
Yeah, it's tricky.
Yeah. Do you think we'll see her get trained as a Jedi?
I would hope not.
Yeah. Because that would take her away from the batch. And I think right now, the chemistry between these four, you'd hate to see it break up.
Mm-hmm. I hope we don't see it. Maybe she has got the force somehow. I don't know. I guess we'll see where the series ends. Like, but I think she, I don't know. Maybe we don't ever see her. Maybe it's for a future story. Maybe that's, she just always lives the rest of her life with, yeah, she's got this ability, but she doesn't train because she doesn't want to. I don't know.
Mm-hmm. Maybe when the whole series is over, that's it. Maybe they realize that the story of Omega and the Bad Batch ends happily or not happily. That's it.
Yeah.
That we're done. We have no more stories to tell. And they are basically going to live happily ever after.
Yeah.
Wherever they are, if that's going to be the case.
Yep. Well,
on that note, should we give reviews or thoughts, yeah, whatever you want to call it?
Let's dive in. Steven, you want to start first?
Yeah, I can go first, William.
That's what happens when you open it up, you get picked.
I did it to myself. So I also, I guess to sum up, I actually came away pretty disappointed by this episode. I'm probably going to give it lower than I think either of you are. The fight between Bad Batch and Asajj is definitely a high point. The Kraken, whatever it's called at the very end, also pretty good. But the majority of the episode, I was just kind of bored. And I kept waiting for something more momentous around Asajj to pop up. And then when it never did, it just left me feeling a little dissatisfied with it. So overall, I think I'm gonna give it a 6 out of 10. And yeah, I mean, like I said, it's a little on the lower side than I would have liked, but I think just expectations of having an Asajj episode end up leaving me a little bit raw compared to where I wanted to be. But on the positive side, I am happy to report that my 6 Womp Rats all succeeded at both test 1 and 2 of Asajj's, you know, little mini Jedi test. They didn't do so well at the Kraken. In fact, they all got eaten, so it's kind of a moot point. But they were both able to balance the fruit on one leg, and they were able to get to the top of the mountain in time. So they are, you know, formerly, you know, force positive, sensitive now. So, yeah, there you go.
Okay, Tom.
You know, the funny thing is, talking to you guys, I'm like, I thought it was a really good episode. I had to give you that. But as we talk about it and discuss, Steven, I'm not saying I was in your camp of being that low in score, but I definitely started lowering my score as we...
Don't lower it on my account.
Not lowering it on your account. I was lowering it because of the discussion of talking about this. So I basically went down to a 7.5. I did enjoy the episode. I, at this point, can accept the vague answer that Ventress gave at the end of the episode, basically saying that she's a cat with 9 lives and has a few left. Okay, I can accept that. At some point, we have to figure out what happened on Dathomir to bring her back, if that is something they are going to say, which it sounds like they're going to tell us at some point. I did love the action sequences. I did believe that when Ventress sent Omega on Batcher to go get that thing, it was just a, hey, we're going to do a fighty-fighty, let's get the kid out of here. I just, I'm not saying the episode after the discussion has left me now flat and I'd love to have answers, but I can see, Stephen, where you're coming from. And William, I see where you're coming from. I see where we're all coming from in this episode. So I'm just going to end it here. 7.5, my 7.5 Womp Rats. They were all eaten by the Kraken thing, and that's it.
Okay. I guess that leaves me. I love Asajj Ventress. She's such a great character. And so just having her back is really cool. I do wish we'd gotten a little bit more about how she got back, because there are so many questions and they're all unanswered. And that's a bit of a bummer. I think they kind of set themselves up. On the one hand, I have to give Lucasfilm credit because they set expectations somewhat by saying, hey, we have a plan that works with Dark Disciples. Disciple. Yes. Thank you. I appreciate that. I think if they'd said more, like what they said when the episode, after the episode came out, it would have helped, because we still went in the episode thinking, oh, we're going to get the answers in that episode, or maybe it's going to be later in the series. I mean, it's possible it will happen. I'm skeptical that we will get the answers this season, just given how close to the end of the series we are. And so, you know, that was a bit of a bummer. I think if they'd come out of the gate and said, look, Dave Filoni had the idea to bring Asajj Ventress back. We're going to do it and respect Dark Disciple because we're working with Dave Filoni. Don't worry. But you're not going to get that answer in this series, but still enjoy. I think people would be feeling very differently about it. And so I think it's kind of a messaging problem, to be honest. But at least they said something before the episode aired. Kind of wish they had, I don't know, I guess... Now that I've said that, I think it's actually a good thing they pre-announced her in the trailer and had something there, so that people weren't just like completely surprised by her return. Even though they did spoil it, I think that's, you know, probably a good thing in this case. And I really enjoyed her in this episode. That Asajj Ventress is such a great character. Her dynamic was great with the Bad Batch. Loved all of it. I think the only part that was weak was the tests themselves, and the fact that, you know, I actually don't even have a complaint with the fact that she didn't train Omega or go any further, because that makes a lot of sense. It was more just a confirmation. So overall, I really enjoyed it. I think the tests were the weakest part of the episode, but there was great action, and just seeing Asajj Ventress there made up for that in my mind. So I'm still going to give it an 8.5 Womp Rats out of 10. I enjoyed it. It was fun to see Asajj Ventress back. And my 8.5 Womp Rats, they actually helped Omega get the white blossom from the tree at the Weeping Maya tree up by the Archeum. So the Archeum. So yeah.
Very kind of them.
It was. That's the only way she got it. She finished the test before sundown. So, yeah. Well, I think that's about it for this week. Very small. There's only a few people in this episode, right? I think there's just three people in the cast: Dee Bradley Baker, Michelle Ang, and Nico Bellman. Yeah. But man, so good. I loved having Asajj Ventress back. But next week, or later this week, actually, as you're listening to this, because this episode comes out on Sunday, and on Wednesday, we'll have our review of The Bad Batch episodes 10 and 11 of Season 3, Identity Crisis and Point of No Return. Again, another two-parter, which means it's got to be big. But what does it mean? Because we thought that would be Asajj's intro, and it's not. So thank you all for listening, and we'll talk to you later this week with our review of The Bad Batch duology, Identity Crisis and Point of No Return. May the Force be with you.
Thank you for listening to the Ion Cannon Podcast, your source for entertainment reviews from a galaxy far, far away. For over a decade, Ion Cannon has covered every corner of the saga, from the films and animated series like The Clone Wars and Rebels, to books, comics, games, and more. If you like what you hear, please rate us in your favorite podcast client. Your review will help this show grow within the Star Wars community. We can be found at our website, ioncanoncast.com,
and you can follow us through Facebook and Twitter. To email us, you can do so at contact@ioncannoncast.com. The Ion Cannon Podcast is not associated with Lucasfilm, the Walt Disney Company, or any and all of their respective trademarks or copyright holders. Any opinion expressed on the show are that of the hosts. This podcast is a production by fans, for fans, and is copyright 2018.